united. We will not be divided.
Alaskans protest President Trump's travel ban. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, amid the chaos of the president's order, the fights to overturn it, one Alaskan gets caught up in the travel ban.
And I asked him what was going on, and he says, well, you can thank Trump for this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at Rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Members of Alaska's congressional delegation have not spoken in one clear voice for or against President Trump's halt on refugee admissions, but they aren't condemning it. Both U.S. senators and Alaska's sole congressman stayed mum on the issue through the weekend. Senator Lisa Murkowski issued a statement earlier today that avoided either endorsement or criticism. Murkowski says Trump has made it clear the security of Americans is his top priority. And she agrees with that. But in the emailed statement, Murkowski also said U.S. immigration policy must strike a balance between national security and our values as Americans. Trump's order indefinitely bans Syrian refugees and blocks refugees from all other countries for 120 days. It also temporarily blocks all visits by citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries: Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Senator Dan Sullivan issued the clearest statement on it. Sullivan says he supports the temporary restrictions, which he says will be in place until our vetting and screening system is thoroughly re-examined. His spokesman says Sullivan also supports the indefinite ban on Syrian refugees, which he considers temporary. Congressman Don Young issued a supportive statement saying he agreed with Trump's stated goal of increasing security. But Young did not make an outright declaration of support for President Trump's order. Young says the pause allows the government to review its vetting procedures. But he did criticize what he called a flawed rollout, in particular when it came to the detention of lawful residents and green card holders. Protesters gathered at airports and on streets around the nation this weekend in reaction to the president's executive order on immigration and refugees. About 200 people gathered in downtown Anchorage on Sunday night to speak against it. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman spoke with some of the protesters.
Asha Artan walks quickly up the snow-covered streets to join her family members who are already at the protest.
I don't feel good.
Artan is originally from Somalia, and she says now she can't go see her aging mother or other family there because she wouldn't be able to return home to Anchorage. She says this is her country, and she doesn't like how divided it feels now.
It's my country. 15 years I live, my children is here, and I don't want to divide the people. I need the people together.
She heads across the street into the chanting crowd that echoes her sentiments.
The people, united, we will not be divided.
As Artan finds her children, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz finishes his remarks and walks away. He's speaking out against the executive order, too.
This is folly. It undermines constitutional principles. It makes our streets less safe, and it puts our country at jeopardy.
Berkowitz says his administration and the Anchorage police remain dedicated to protecting everyone in the community, no matter where they come from. Officers stand at the edge of the crowd, keeping people from spilling into traffic. Protesters wave signs with sayings like, "Fear is a mind killer," "Jesus was a refugee." And first, they came for the Muslims, and we said, "Hell no." Among them is Rabbi Michael Oblath, who says he attended the protest because Jewish tradition says to respect and love people who come from different places, the strangers in our midst, because we were all once strangers too. He says now many people fear differences.
When we start finding scapegoats, there's something wrong with us and that we're ignoring. And it takes a lot of serious mindful thinking to understand what it is that is pushing us in that direction.
Anchorage resident Michelle Sinnott says she's there to show her neighbors that she stands with them.
I'm here for the long haul, and I think everybody else is too. I'm digging in.
No ban, no registry. Down with white supremacy, no ban.
In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Many in Alaska are not opposed to the president's order. During a press conference held in the Capitol this morning, Senate President Pete Kelly says the temporary ban on immigration from seven Muslim-majority countries affects a small group of just over 100 people. But Kelly believes that these aren't issues the state Senate has control over.
So it's a pretty limited restriction on immigration. It's not in our purview. But that's my opinion, is that it's pretty limited as well. So if obviously we're a sovereign nation, if we can't determine who comes into our country based on terrorist activities and those things that are a threat to national security, we've got bigger problems than we thought we did.
On Monday, conservative commentators in Alaska were generally supportive of the executive order, though their enthusiasm varied. Former GOP spokesperson and blogger Suzanne Downing wrote, "The policy delivers on what Trump promised to do while campaigning." Downing points out that Trump's cap on refugees at 50,000 people a year was a target considered high under the George W. Bush administration, while characterizing protests over the weekend as, quote, predictable and hysterical. Downing criticized the implementation of the policy as ham-fisted, saying the time frame undermined the measure's aims. During his midday radio program on KFQD in Anchorage, conservative talk show host Dave Stearin says while detractors see the policy as racist and xenophobic, many proponents see it as a logical first step to halt potential terrorist threats, one, he says, without any explicit discrimination.
First of all, the myths. This is a ban on Muslims. Come on, kids. President Trump wanted to ban Muslims. He would have banned people traveling from France, from Saudi Arabia, from Singapore, from Indonesia. It is not a ban on Muslims. Is it a ban that affects seven predominantly Muslim nations? Yes.
But Stearin stopped short of a full-throated endorsement, casting doubt on whether the measure would actually work in fulfilling its main goal.
Does it make this nation safer? That is a tough one for me to buy. Usually, you point to an imminent threat, a clear and present danger.
Stearin says in the absence of public evidence, the ban's efficacy can't be assessed. Pakistan is not on the list of seven countries that are under the temporary travel ban, but longtime Alaska resident Shella Anjum is still nervous about traveling to her home country. She arrived in Alaska in 1977 after leaving Pakistan in 1968 to attend college in the United States. She is a naturalized citizen and has traveled almost annually to visit her family in the city of Karachi in Pakistan. Anjum was at the airport in Anchorage this morning waiting to board a plane for her annual visit. She's traveling without her husband and daughter, both U.S.-born citizens, and she says she's nervous.
I mean, I know that I have an American passport and that I have lived in this country for a very long time, but there's been so much uncertainty about what is coming down from Washington that nobody seems to know what to expect. And I think the uncertainty that bothers me, and also the scenes that I've seen at airports all over the world, I am pretty sure that I will come back without any problem. But I cannot say that I am 100% sure.
Because you're having some anxiety about it, did you think about postponing your trip?
No, because I believe as a citizen of this country, I have the right to travel where I want to, places that will accept the American passport. I can go there. And as a citizen of this country, I have the right to come back. I am not going on any kind of a trip that has any other purpose but to visit my family, and I plan to travel in Pakistan, and I hope to write a few essays about being there. I am a frequent visitor to the Swat Valley, where Malala Yousafzai, the Nobel laureate winner, is from. I know Malala, and I've been to Swat, and I've stayed in her home. And I will go back to Swat again, and I want to write about how the women of Swat are doing.
Pakistan is not on the list of seven countries, but it does border Iran. What do you think this means for these two countries that are neighbors? One of them is on the list, one of them is not.
You know, Pakistan is known as the place where Osama bin Laden lived and where he was killed. And there are numerous terroristic organizations in the country, very fanatical Muslims. And there have been a few incidents in this country, the one in California, the one, I believe, in the South, where the person who killed some Americans was originally from Pakistan. So I would not be surprised if maybe the administration is thinking about adding Pakistan on the list, or at least making things more difficult for the people from there to travel to the United States.
Shella Anjum is a longtime Anchorage resident. She left this morning for an annual visit to her family in Pakistan. But the order is already affecting Alaskans. Wrangell fisherman and business owner Sylvia Edifa says she and her husband and friends were returning from a vacation in Costa Rica this weekend when she got held up at the Los Angeles International Airport. Edifa has been an American citizen since birth. She was born in Iran to an American mom and an Iranian dad before the country's Islamic Revolution. Edifa didn't know about Trump's order when she got to LAX, so when she was stopped at passport control, she didn't think too much of it until an agent led her to a door.
And I asked him what was going on, and he says, well, you can thank Trump for this.
Edifa says she noisily protested that she was a U.S. citizen and that holding her was unconstitutional. She says she was held for an hour. She did not miss her connecting flight, but Edifa says the whole experience seems pointless and wasteful.
You know, to hold the country secure, I'm all for it. But it's how you do it. If you need security, why name seven countries? Why not have security?
Edifa says she thinks Customs and Border Protection agents made a mistake in holding her because they were blindsided.
And in looking up the chain to have an idea of what they were supposed to do, there was nothing for them.
Edifa says she's certain if she hadn't been as outspoken about her rights, she might have languished in the holding room for much longer. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Tustamina 200 sled dog race comes down to the wire.
He really put up a good fight for like 20 miles.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're a rural Alaska resident, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, February 3, 2017. Applicants with knowledge of regional subsistence uses, customs, and traditions are needed. Council meetings serve as a forum for subsistence management. More at 1-800-478-1456. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
A search and rescue operation is underway for three people aboard a flight that went missing yesterday in South Central. The Cessna 180 departed Lake Hood Sunday afternoon on the way to the Kenai Peninsula. The flight was reported overdue later that day. Shortly thereafter, calls began coming into the Rescue Coordination Center at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson about an emergency locator signal transmitted from the area. Staff Sergeant Edward Edgerton is a public affairs specialist with the Alaska Air National Guard. He says the Guard sent out two HH-60 Pavehawk helicopters, each with a team of Guardian Angel pararescuemen.
So they launched yesterday and searched, you know, through the day, through the night, and were unable to find them, had to return to base, refuel, reset, that kind of thing, and are continuing the search today.
Alaska Civil Air Patrol is also assisting with the search. As of Monday afternoon, there were no official ground searches underway. The passengers and pilot have not yet been identified. However, the Alaska District Church of the Nazarene posted on Facebook last night that three of its Soldotna area members may have been on board. three electric utilities serving the Anchorage area, Chugach Electric Association, Municipal Light and Power, and Matanuska Electric Association, today announced a preliminary agreement to work together to provide lower-cost power. Though not finalized, the agreement makes it easier for the electric utilities to buy power from each other when it's cost-effective. Speaking at a press conference, Matanuska Electric Association CEO Tony Izzo likened it to being able to choose a vehicle based on road conditions.
If I have to commute up a mountain, I'm going to take the four-wheeler. And if I have to run down the clear highway, I'm going to take the most fuel-efficient vehicle.
The utilities estimate the agreement could jointly save $12 to $16 million a year in costs. However, they said it's too early to know how big of an impact this will have on electric bills. The announcement comes over a year after the Regulatory Commission of Alaska wrote a letter to the legislature saying the current rail belt electric system does not deliver the maximum benefit possible to ratepayers. The agreement announced today begins to address some but not all of RCA's recommendations. For example, the commission said all six electric utilities serving the region stretching from Homer to Fairbanks should coordinate, not just the three utilities in the Anchorage area. RCA Chairman Bob Pickett views today's announcement as a good first step.
The utilities have voluntarily come to this agreement amongst themselves, and the commission, I believe, will be very supportive of this effort.
The RCA needs to approve any final agreement the utilities reach. The utilities don't expect to submit one to RCA until 2018. As the legislature tries to develop a viable solution to Alaska's budget woes, school districts are exploring options to deal with flat state funding anticipated during the next fiscal year. Though the level of funding is likely to be similar to the previous year, rising annual costs mean the Anchorage School District is facing a possible shortfall of about $15 million. ASD Superintendent Dina Paramo says it will be difficult to balance the budget without affecting employees.
I don't look to have any type of layoffs. We're really looking at our attrition and being able to reorganize. Those folks that want to work for ASD, we would want to keep them working for our organization, but we might be having different jobs for folks.
Among the drivers for finding efficiencies within the district is the establishment of a pupil-to-teacher ratio, which is the number of staff members, not limited to teachers, assigned per student.
Whether that's principals, counselors, safety officers, we did do that for nurses, but we're looking at all those additional functions in a school, whether it's reading specialists, career tech, and we didn't have in our ratios articulated necessarily for those other subjects and other supports.
ASD is also planning on presenting a $58.5 million bond package to Anchorage voters in April. Paramo says the package includes money to replace out-of-date heating and ventilation systems and to make structural and seismic improvements to some buildings.
And then finally, eight roofs. So only the roofs that actually have water coming in and through the ceilings where we have buckets are the schools targeted. So there's eight of them. Again, it's not to build into the future, which I would love to do, create 21st century schools and learning and learning spaces, but it is simply taking care of our present infrastructure.
Paramo says the district and Anchorage School Board will engage in more detail-oriented budget discussions next month. Governor Bill Walker's proposed budget for fiscal year 2018 allocates more than $1.27 billion in unrestricted and designated general funds to education. Of that money, ASD would receive about $330 million, or a little more than a quarter of the state's education budget.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
January 31st is the last day to enroll in the health insurance marketplace. For assistance in your area, go to getcoveredalaska.org or call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association.
In September, the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, 4A's, experienced a theft of client information, including names, addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, and health information. For questions about identity and other theft, 4A's recommends you call the Federal Trade Commission at 877-438-4338 or the 4A's at 800-478-2437 or visit their website, alaskanaids.org. This message is sponsored by 4A's.
The Alaska Railroad is riding out tough times. The state-owned railroad has seen revenue drop substantially, according to Railroad President and CEO Bill O'Leary. The decline has largely been driven by losses in its primary freight hauling business.
Just on a tonnage basis, by about 44% since 2010.
O'Leary says the decline reflects loss of a contract for transport of petroleum products after Flint Hills shuttered its North Pole refinery in 2014. He says the railroad's freight business has also taken two other major hits.
The drop in export coal tonnage, where we would take coal from the Yucabeli mine in Healy and take it down to Seward for export to places like Chile, Korea, and Japan. The other area we had experienced growth in that has, of course, since fallen off was supporting North Slope activity.
O'Leary says combined, the freight losses have dragged down net earnings, which had ranged between $10 and $14 million in previous years.
We're anticipating net earnings of in the $4 to $4.5 million range. So, you know, as those freight drop in freight tonnage have been going on, we've done our best to shed cost that goes along with that. That's been extraordinarily difficult of late here, and we've sort of reached some level of diminishing returns on that.
O'Leary says the railroad has reduced the number of trains it operates and cut daily freight service between Anchorage and Fairbanks from 7 to 5 days per week. He notes that passenger numbers are a bright spot, up 22% since 2010.
Alaska is viewed as an exotic but safe destination, and the railroad really is kind of a key piece of many people's activities coming to when they come to Alaska.
O'Leary says passenger numbers are the best the Alaska Railroad has experienced in its history. He says the railroad is also refocusing on new revenue areas, including real estate ventures on its substantial land holdings, noting a new Anchorage condominium development announced last week. Kodiak could see new missile testing before the end of the year. Earlier this month, the Missile Defense Agency put out a proposed environmental impact study stating that there are no negative impacts from launching missile defense test flights from the Pacific Spaceport complex on Kodiak Island. MDA spokesman Chris Johnson says if the EIS is approved, equipment and operations for the High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, as well as the Patriot missile defense systems, will be moved to the island.
Kodiak provides a good opportunity for us in that it's got a tremendous amount of range space over the North Pacific Ocean, and there's already several services built there.
Many of the THAAD assets are currently in Hawaii and Wake Island. Johnson says the system is largely self-contained and won't require much new construction or any year-round personnel. MDA is proposing two test launches a year over the next decade, exercises in which the THAAD system tracks a practice missile using a radar system before launching an interceptor. The idea is to destroy an intercontinental ballistic missile before it detonates on a target. If given approval, the MDA could begin conducting launches this summer. Alaska residents have until February 13th to submit comments to the proposed environmental assessment. After a three-year hiatus, the Kenai Peninsula Tustamina 200 sled dog race is over. Iditarod veteran Sim Smith of Big Lake took first place, followed closely by Girdwood musher Nicholas Petit. KBBI's Shayla Farzan reports.
The final stretch of the Tustamina 200 sled dog race was nearly too close to call. Nicolas Petit led the pack for much of the 200-mile race through Kenai Peninsula's Caribou Hills. But just after the final checkpoint at Freddy's Lodge in Nanilchik, Sim Smith began closing the gap.
I realized that Nick was just outrunning me. I got back to Freddy's and I'd only made 5 minutes, and I was just like, oh no, this is going to be really tough. And it was. It was definitely tough to catch him.
Smith sped up, catching sight of Petit just 30 miles from the finish line. The two mushers were neck and neck for the last leg of the race, zipping through near blizzard conditions.
When he saw me, he started really pouring it to it, and I could barely keep up with him for the next 20 miles, probably almost. And finally, his dog started to get a little tired of the speed he was holding, but he really put up a good fight for like 20 miles.
Smith finished in 26 hours, 3 minutes, just 3 minutes ahead of Petit.
There's your winner!
For Petit, winning the race was never the goal.
I don't care if we win. I'm just going to run my dogs at the pace that I think works for them. And if we get passed by 30 people, I don't care.
Fairbanks musher Dave Turner finished third, clocking in at 26 hours, 48 minutes. Because T200 is one of the most southern races in the state, teams often cope with warmer conditions than they're used to. Turner said he kept a close eye on his dogs to be sure they didn't overheat.
It was a good 50 degrees warmer than the highest that what we were used to for the last like 3 weeks. Half the dogs didn't want to drink anything when we finished the run, and they all drank later, but it took a while. They needed to cool down.
The trail begins in Kisilov, curving south through the Caribou Hills to Homer, before looping north again. A tight turn on a bridge over Deep Creek in Nanilchik proved tricky for several teams, including that of seasoned musher Mitch Seavey. Deep Creek was one of the few places on the trail with open water, unlike in years past when the race was canceled due to warm, wet conditions. Some mushers, like Monica Zappa of Kisilov, have been hoping for a chance to compete on home turf.
I've totally been waiting for 4 years to do this race. Wasn't sure if it was ever going to happen, but here we are.
Crowds met the racers at checkpoints along the way to cheer them on, including McNeil Canyon Elementary School in Homer. Mila Porcel, who conducts freight expeditions with sled dogs, was one of the spectators at McNeil. She says working as a musher goes beyond the excitement of the race.
These animals are unbelievable in what they can do, the minds they have, the energy that they feed you, and that's a very, very special feeling when you get this synergy between you and this group of dogs.
23 teams competed in the race, with 2 scratches. This year's $30,000 purse will be distributed among the top 20 mushers. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzon.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ann Hillman, Zachariah Hughes, Elizabeth Harbaugh, and Josh Edge in Anchorage, Shayla Farzon and Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN, covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.